From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. I've chosen three articles today that relate to COVID-19. Obviously, we continue to be stymied by this virus, and we're learning things about it all the time, and it affects the patients that you and I care for a great deal. The first article we'll talk about is a return to the question, do patients with acute MI stay away from the hospital? And if so, what happens? We'll talk about ventilator triage policies, very interesting paper. And then finally, look at this question about body mass index and risk for intubation or death in patients who have COVID-19 infection. So the first paper was a really great analysis looking at myocardial infarction in the Northwest. It was a study that examined outcomes in three different time frames, 2018, early 2019, to May of 2020. And the key was the look at before COVID. That was December 30, 2018 to February 22nd of 2020. And then the early COVID-19 surge in that region from February 23rd to March 28th. And then what they called later COVID from March 29th to May 16th. And the authors were interested in the in-hospital mortality, which was risk-adjusted, and the weekly rate of acute MI, both STEMI and non-STEMI, in a number of hospitals. So there were over 15,000 hospitalizations that were studied. A third of them were STEMIs. And if you looked at the period from the early period compared to the early COVID period, there was a reduction in AMI hospitalizations. And that continued in the later COVID period. Importantly, the odds of mortality, so the O-to-E ratio for acute MI, increased during the COVID period, and particularly with STEMI, where it was 1.96. And this was noted even after risk adjustment, so the odds ratio was 1.52. So the authors observed the fact that there was a reduction in MI admissions during the early and later COVID periods, and there was a higher chance of mortality, particularly in the STEMI patients. And it certainly gives rise to the speculation that patients are staying away from the hospital during a COVID surge, and the ones who particularly perhaps are harmed are those with STEMI who might get benefit from early reperfusion therapy. Also, of course, the type of reperfusion therapy could matter, where some situations are occurring where the treating hospital makes a decision to use lytic therapy rather than a primary PCI because of all of the issues with COVID. So we've seen this type of analysis from Italy, from New York, and the UK. So over and over, we're seeing evidence that because of fear, patients stay away from hospitals during COVID surges. And of course, if they do that with acute myocardial infarction, it can have grave consequences. Clearly, we need more community education about the low risk of contacting COVID, especially now when you're admitted to a hospital. The second paper came out this week in Annals of Internal Medicine. It looks at ventilator triage policies in COVID-19. And I think some of you have seen some of the news reports that came out early on from several countries in Europe raising questions about not providing a ventilator therapy for COVID-19 patients over a certain age, et cetera. And this was an interesting analysis where the authors surveyed the Association of Bioethics Program Directors in hospitals throughout America. And they wanted to know if there was a triage policy for managing COVID-19, what criteria would be used for such a policy, and which individuals would be involved in making those policies. That's very interesting. Over half of the respondents did not have a ventilator triage policy in their institution, and 10% indicated that while they did, they would not publicly share their findings. There were 26 available policies that were analyzed, and the criteria that were most common, of course, were benefit. 96% of the respondents said that the people with the greatest benefit of survival would be the ones who would get the defibrillator in a case of shortage. And also the notion of need, that is the potential to not offer a ventilator to patients who had a very high SOFA or M-SOFA score, or those who'd already suffered cardiac arrest or extensive burns, for example. The ethical reasons guiding the policies were, as you expect, justice, transparency, and stewardship. But there was a lot of heterogeneity among these various bioethics experts. Some of them thought that younger patients should be given priority, while others didn't, and they didn't provide a specific age thresholds. Some thought that an anticipated resource consumption that was higher, perhaps, in an older person should be a factor, but it was only cited in about 38%. Another interesting notion here was the role of the treating physician. 50% of those thought that the treating physician should not be involved in the triage decision-making process, which is, of course, a more ethically pleasing way of approaching this challenge. So I thought this was an interesting article, and it appears that for the most part in the U.S., we've been able to meet the challenge of the surges with adequate ventilator surge in hospitals. But there's a real concern if we get another spike, a big spike in the fall or winter, at the same time we have influenza, it is possible we would run out of ventilators. And the ability of hospitals to gather around an ethical framework for how we triage the use of ventilators would be appropriate. Clearly, it feels like war, front lines of a battlefield, and triage. We've never been through this in my lifetime, and it's a very strange thing to think about, but something that we must. The last article was a paper also this week in Annals looking at body mass index and risk for intubation or death in COVID-19. It also looked at the biomarker elevation in relation to obesity. So it's a retrospective study of almost 2,500 patients in New York. They were studied with a Cox proportional hazard model looking for factors including age, diabetes, cardiopulmonary conditions that would relate to either intubation or death. And body size was characterized as either underweight, a BMI less than 18.5, overweight 25 to 30, or obese greater than 30. And that was subcategorized as 30 to 35, 35 to 40, or greater than 40 in terms of BMI. So the median hospital stay was 7 days. Among the total cohort, 22% were intubated and 25% died. There was a greater risk of death or respiratory failure and intubation among obese compared to overweight. And among the obese, the highest risk group were the class 3, the BMI greater than 40. Their hazard ratio for death or intubation was 1.6. It's interesting that relationship, though, was only observed in people under the age of 65. It did not appear to have a significant impact on patients over 65. And interestingly, the underweight cohort, BMI less than 18.5, also had a higher risk of death or intubation. There was no strong relationship between the inflammatory markers, the biomarkers that were measured in this study. So the authors concluded that obesity, particularly morbid obesity, is associated with higher risk of intubation and death in COVID-19, but particularly in patients who are on the younger side. So I've enjoyed bringing these three articles to you today. I'm recording this podcast on Tuesday, August 11th. We talked about outcomes with acute MI in COVID surge. We talked about ventilator triage and about the relationship between obesity and need for intubation and or death in COVID-19. We have a wonderful hub for you on the website, acc.org, a COVID-19 hub. It has all kinds of information for you, webinars, the journal scans for today's articles, etc. I encourage you to use it liberally. And we're all learning as we go with this very unique pandemic. I hope you have a very good and safe week. This is Kim Eagle for acc.org, and I'm out.